Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 264. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom.
As a high school-aged teenager in England, Barry noticed that the girls always seemed to be dating guys who just weren't right for them. He saw them getting hurt over and over by their bad choices. He felt frustrated. Why couldn't they see what he saw?
Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Barry Selby. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Barry, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
I would say absolutely.
All righty. We want to hear the whole story. Barry is a passionate champion for the divine feminine. He helps strong, successful, single women stop shortchanging their love life. When women get manipulated and hurt, it really ignites his passion to help them become wise and smart in their dating choices. He is passionate about women being honored and respected in love. Well, I honor and respect you for your mission, Barry, because I think it's a huge issue that needs addressing, and congratulations on that. So take us into what you're doing right now for a couple of minutes and just tell us what your life and career are now before we get into your backstory.
Sure. The way I'm described is I'm a number one best-selling author. I speak on telesummits and in front of groups fairly regularly, and I have a fairly solid group of private clients, and I help them transform their lives. And I love seeing my clients thrive and be happy and loving the life they live.
Yes, exactly. And how long have you been doing this particular kind of work? How long has this been your niche?
It's been a niche for probably about, well, since 2010, so basically 5-6 years now. It's been specifically on this.
Excellent, good. And during that time, the world has not become less complex, has it?
Not even close.
Okie dokie. Well, as you know, we've discussed that everyone's life is composed of turning points, scales, should he call them passages. And at these times in our lives, we're faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the next handful of years of our lives. This is developmental psychology and all kinds of other modalities. So take us back into the backstory of Barry Selby and as far back as you want to go and tell us about some of the more memorable people and events that have made you who you are today.
Okay, it's going to be interesting sharing.
Thank you.
I would say what first sparked this motivation and what really drives my passion started when I was in my teens, back when I was in high school, back in England where I'm from. And I noticed two things. One is that I wasn't getting all the dates that the girls were sort of inviting out the guys. And secondly, I was really, I'd say, challenged, disturbed, frustrated, watching girls make bad choices. And it was almost like I felt their protector or something inside of me wanted to make sure they were taking care of themselves, but I would see them just choose badly, get hurt, wounded, etc. And so it became this innate, I wouldn't say gift, but certainly my drive that I was always there for my female friends pretty much all the way through my life. But it was never something I did as a business, and that was kind of come much later. So that started in my teens, and I can go on if you want in terms of...
Well, yeah, I do. I think it's fascinating. Back then, what were your insights and observations about why it was happening? What did you perceive that was really going on there that maybe some of your friends weren't perceiving?
Well, I just guess I had more of an objective perspective because I was standing outside of what was happening. And I would see them choosing based on values that, from what I could tell, were really surface. And what they were getting as a result was a very surface relationship. It wasn't fulfilling. Now, even at this age, I didn't really have the languaging or the understanding. But, you know, 20/20 hindsight makes it easy to explain.
Sure.
But I had this experience of watching them choose based upon the values they thought they were living up to, which is the standing in the community or the best looking guy in school sort of thing. It was those sort of motivations that seemed to be driving them.
He was the football quarterback or whatever he was, right?
Equivalent, yes. Right. Soccer playing. Yeah, center forward type thing in England, yeah.
Well, then where did you go next? What happened next in your life and career?
Well, I went on to college to do other things and fell into the computer science arena and actually went into computer programming. And that led me through a nice growth period because I basically went to work in the computer industry pretty quickly. And through the different companies I worked for, spent probably 3 years working in Europe, different countries. And then finally, after coming to England 3 times to different countries, I decided to work in some other place where they spoke English and landed myself a job in America in Los Angeles in 1981.
What is it in your makeup, in your abilities and skills that made you gravitate? You literally majored in computer science in college, right, at university?
That's where I started, but I didn't finish college because at that time, it's back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was much more of a focus on people having work experience than there was on academic education.
Yes, exactly. Makes sense. Okay, so then you came to the United States, and what did you do?
Well, I came to the United States and went to work for a company out here. At the end of the six-month contract, out of the six people brought in from England, only one was kept, and it wasn't me, but I had made some friends at a local English pub in Los Angeles, and they'd hired me at their company, where for another 2 years I worked with them to get my green card. And okay. Then once I got my green card, things started shifting.
And how so? What happened that was good?
Well, once I had my green card, I quit the company I was working for and went freelance because there's more money to be made, it's more fun and more flexible. But also, pretty quickly what happened, I would say maybe, God, less than 3 months after I got my green card and went freelance, I met with a friend of mine who I was working with in the computer industry in freelance business for breakfast one morning. And we're sitting in this cafe outside the office. We're talking, and he looked really exhausted. It was like on a Thursday morning, I think it was. And then I said, "You look so tired. What's going on? Are you about partying?" He said, No. I was at this thing called a seminar." And I was like, "What on earth is a seminar? I'd never heard of one of these things at the time." And so he proceeded to tell me he went to this event. It was the beginning of a 5-day seminar, 6-day seminar. And he said he'd learned some good information and met some cool people. And there were some really cute women there. And I said, "Where do I sign up?" And that was the turning point that really changed my life, because from that point forward, from late '84. Till now, I've been very involved and very invested in the personal growth industry as part of my learning and growth and my development myself. So personal to my work experience, there was this personal experience running parallel.
Yeah. What was it, a seminar? Was it a personal development seminar or a computer seminar?
The personal development, totally about personal human growth and development, and really understanding the psychology of who we are.
Oh, okay, good. Did you find it illuminating? Was it useful?
Very much so. And in fact, some of the things I learned then I still use today, and that's 30 years later. So definitely some good information in there, and really teaching things about principles about responsibility, from things just about being accountable to ourselves and having more ownership of our own experience in the world. It was really the first step into a long journey about really owning my life and living in a way that was much more authentic and self-reliant.
Yes, those are great words, authenticity and self-reliance. So what happened next in the storyline?
I would say, generously saying, I bounced around from several careers. In fact, up to the one I've got now, I'd had 8 different careers over the years. So computer science and computer programming is what I did at the beginning. I moved quickly out of that into different organizations because of the work I was doing in personal growth. I sort of fell into a Peace Foundation, worked in a couple of nonprofits. I got involved in the printing industry through different ways, different means. I mean, literally, it was kind of like domino effect of things that happened. I found the computers. I didn't like the big mainframes. I got really tired of the old format and decided I want to try something new. And I discovered in 81, when I came out to LA, I was working in a company where they had a Xerox Star system in one of the sides of the office. And that was the equipment that Apple bought the software for to make the Apple Macintosh.
Oh, and it was called the Xerox Star system. Is that what you said?
Xerox Star, yeah. It was basically what had, at that point, a graphic interface with a mouse. And it's the first time I'd ever seen one, and I was fascinated by it. And that was like probably a $25,000-$30,000 piece of equipment sitting in, you know, on someone's desk. But in 84, the Macintosh came out. In 87, I bought my first Macintosh and fell in love with it. And that was the beginning of a long relationship with the Macintosh industry. And that led me into graphic design and then into computer prepress for printing industry, which is what I did for about a dozen years. Okay. So I worked in manufacturing for a while and got really fulfilled in that area, doing things that were really fun to create physical products from graphic and computer-based images.
Yeah, you're the first person I don't have any kind of technical background at all, but I didn't know, even though I've read about the Apple story in history, I didn't know that came from the Xerox Star system. That's a nice piece of, how did Jobs and Wozniak get their hands on that? Or was that something they could license or whatever?
I've heard different stories about it. I don't know the details specifically. Some people said they stole it. Some people said they bought it. Some people they borrowed it. I don't know the actual details, to be honest. I'd rather not try and tell you the exact story because I'd be inaccurate probably in my telling of it.
No, that's okay. Jobs was an interesting character. So,
indeed,
any of those possibilities could be true. Could be absolutely true, right?
Right.
Okay. Tell us more. This is right on target. What happened next?
Well, in the computer industry, in the printing industry, I really found that I loved what I was doing. At that time, I was thinking, I don't remember what era that was. I know it's when I just started my spiritual path in really renewed path. I'd found in the mid-80s a spiritual teacher that I was following because my friends were following him and I was getting the value out of the teaching, but he was never my guru. And frankly, I think anybody should be our guru. But in the early 90s, I had actually began studying a master's degree in spiritual psychology, and some of my classmates were involved in this spiritual center in Los Angeles where they had a choir. And I love music, and they said, "You've got to come to us, sing the choir. It's so much fun." I was like, "Love it. So I'd love to do that." So the early 90s, this was 94, I went to see these folks sing and fell in love with the place and really moved my heart deeply. So I found that's my spiritual calling. I've been there, that's my spiritual home. I've been there now since 94, so 22 years, and been licensed as a spiritual counselor there since 2000, so that's 16 years.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's been, again, separate from my career. That was what I was doing as my own personal development, although it did become part of my career being a spiritual counselor.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's beautiful. So what's the next part on your path? What happened? What's been happening?
Yes. Well, this is what really shifted me into the work I do now. Over the years, I'd had different relationships and being involved in personal growth seminars, teachings, trainings. I figured I knew things about life that were pretty good. And I thought I was pretty good at this stuff. But my dating life didn't reflect that. I still made mistakes, had issues, breakups, messed up my relationships and other things too. And between 2000 and 2006, roughly, I went through three different relationships where the same experience for me happened. It was interesting because looking back now, I see how clearly, even though we're very different women, there was a similar pattern, what drew me to them, what attracted me to them, and what I did to mess it up. And okay. at the end of the last one in 2006, I was like, okay, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Whatever's happening, I'm screwing up. I'm not giving them what they want. They like me initially, but then it falls apart. What's going wrong? Yes. And my prayer basically was, okay, God, show me a sign. Give me a clue. Like, what is it I'm not doing? And it was kind of a sarcastic, but also a very heartfelt request.
Right.
And 3 months later, I met this woman walking into my spiritual community who was, the only way I can describe it, she was glowing. And it was like spirit, I would say that God's spirit, we're going to call it, had a neon sign overhead saying, talk to this woman. So I did.
Beautiful.
And she basically just got back from a retreat and she told me about it. I went and checked out another seminar. But the piece that I really learned in this journey with this new organization and through several teachers following from that, was the understanding of the masculine and feminine polarity in relationship and in human development, which to that point, after 20-something years, I never really learned about. What I discovered was a piece missing from my own understanding and logic, but also my embodiment of how to be in a healthy relationship in the masculine polarity. And when it did that, it changed my relationship to everybody, and everything shifted for me. And from that piece, it became clear that I needed to spread this word out more often. And secondly, one of the teachers in this format has said to me, that my work, whatever I do in the world, must come before my relationship. It's actually a trait of the masculine, is that because we are sequential linear beings in the male format, that our strength is in clarity of our vision and mission and purpose in the world first, and after that's moving, we can then have a healthy relationship. But the other way around doesn't usually work. And I'd proven that very clearly 3 times in a row, and that's kind of the circuit that really lined up for me to know what I was missing was owning my truth and living my work, and that's what led me into the work I'm doing now.
No, it's perfect. Repeat that, if you would, please. Men, for the most part, I know you can't generalize, but are sequential linear beings. Say that
yes.
part again.
Okay. Something I learned from several teachers, including David Ada and Alison Armstrong, who I talk about in my book and in my work, to talk about how men, we are generally linear beings. We're really good at one thing at a time because we are goal-centric. We as men, particularly in the masculine, are really good at going for one thing at a time, complete that, next thing, do it, complete that as well. We're good at problem solving, troubleshooting, and also goal completion. That's our strength. The feminine women are able to do things more than one thing at a time. Their ability to function, to multitask is a gift they have that we as men can rarely copy or emulate. So when it comes to life and relationships, for men, first of all, we have to have a legacy or reason for being. That's what gives us meaning in life. And that can be our relationship, but rarely, usually it's not. Usually it's something in the world that could be a service, it could be a social condition, it could be a mission, a book, a deliverable, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And by doing that first and getting that running, so it's almost like having the engine running on idle so it can do it on its own without a continual maintenance, then we can add a relationship to it in a healthy way because, again, we are good at single things, single focus. And if we do 3 or 4 things at once, we don't do anything well.
What do you think the reasons are behind the statistics that have been going on, the research that's been going on for 20 years by Gallup and others about asking people in the workplace, are they using the best of who they are, their talents and so forth? And the majority around the world and even in this country, the vast majority say no. And again, I always qualify by saying there are a lot of reasons and circumstances and people are doing the best they can. But at the end of the day, the fact that the majority of people aren't doing what they do best is not only there are many human casualties for that, spiritually, emotionally, physically, but there's the economic casualties are trillions of dollars. What's that about?
Well, I can't give you exactly like one answer solves everything, however.
No, I know. I wish you could, but
Oh, sure. No, truth be told, I believe what it is that we as a society have been raised to fit into shoeboxes to do things a certain way, which is part of it. The second part is that men, especially women, have been falling in the same trap too, is that we're raised to fit into a system that teaches us through an academic scoring system and then a business system to just go to work and do a 9-to-5 and then retire and then be done.
That's right.
And the problem is that was a temporary model established during the Second World War. Actually, maybe in the First World War, even the Second World War, especially in England, we had this. It was a production line mentality to get kids in school to follow suit so they could go and work in production lines at factories to help put the country back on its feet. And they never changed it. So it's still happening now as a teaching, but it's not working because the global culture, business model, and the way people work is changing, but the school system hasn't changed to match it.
You're the first guest in over 270 in the last 11 months that has nailed that. And that's exactly right. I happen to know that what you say is exactly true. And it's just a model that was never changed. And isn't that amazing? Isn't that profound?
I didn't know that. Everybody didn't know this. I thought it was common knowledge, but I guess it wasn't.
Well, I mean, it just takes sort of an appreciation of systems and, you know, sort of a bigger overview about this, how the whole society is structured. You know, I guess most of us don't think about that much. And I happened to learn this from a friend. I was lucky. But I think that's exactly right. And now it's just blown apart by this thing called the Internet because
you know,
people go out and build humongous lives without learning about Socrates and Aristotle and physics, you know. Mm-hmm. As much as I like liberal education, it's not what's here. I mean, it's not what's necessary. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. We're raised in shoeboxes. The academic and business model is still based on an outdated model. And what else is part of the problem for why people can't find their sweet spots?
Because people, to a large degree, haven't been trained, so they're afraid of stepping out and doing their own thing, whatever that thing is. You know, I wasn't comfortable initially because I was getting like, how do I step out on faith? But frankly, because I hadn't had a long one career that was solid, paying lots of bills and putting towards retirement, I didn't have a big safety net to jump from. So in a way, I was already off the cliff anyway. Mm-hmm. So it made it much easier in a way because I already thought, well, I'm already risking this. Let's go further.
Oh, that's insightful.
Because a lot of people out there, you know, they go to a job they're in for 20 years. Or a career or vocation that basically becomes a safety net. It's almost like harness they stay in because it's safer than jumping out on your own.
Woody Allen said life is a continuation of high school.
it's so true. Absolutely.
Right. I know.
Well, no, and that was the point. There is this sense of we'd rather be in that same cocoon because we don't learn to live really autonomously for ourselves. We just live in the same routine that we were raised with because that's what we know as the normal.
Right. And it's understandable to a point. It's very lamentable, but understandable. So what would you say to listeners? What would you say at whatever age they are, whether they're working in the system or out, what would you say to them to be able to find themselves and, as I say, listen to that wee small voice about who's the best of who they are?
Well, first of all, it's like if you're not satisfied with being in that general safe net, which most people are not, then you'll be willing to ask some seriously important questions, which is look in the mirror and ask yourself, what do I really want? If you start with that, that can start the conversation and the inquiry into discovering what it is that really drives you. So it may be something we say that when you ask in the mirror what I really want is to change a social condition, or it may be to live in a different country even, because that happened for me. Mm-hmm. So it's really having that willingness to ask and then listen to the answer that comes back.
Exactly.
That's a good step. Yeah, that's a good first step.
Yes. And then how do you deploy that? What's the next step? Or what's a next step?
Well, I was lucky enough to say being some seminars teachings that really opened me up to what was my biggest thing that drove me. And when I talk to people in their quest for discovering who they are, I say, really, it's got to be clear. What is it that fulfills you when you're out in the world? What is those things, those qualities you like to experience, like to share, like to teach, and like to see in other people that really resonate for you? And sometimes it could be looking at other people as a model or as a example of what you like and go, that's what I really want to feel like. And it's that natural resonance versus what you are trained to think. So it does require a separation of that habitual pattern that we've had in our lives. So, okay, if I had no structure, no limitation, what do I feel most aligned to? And then listen to the answer.
Right. And then the discipline, don't you think discipline is a huge part that you, because if you're caught in that paradigm and it's, you know, you're just working hard and taking care of your family or whatever it is, it's just hard to put aside time to think and feel about what do I really want? I mean, it takes a lot of depth, you know, it takes
absolutely
a lot of. So what have been the greatest, the most palpable deliverables or takeaways for you in your life for continuing to move yourself down the road less traveled to find out who you really are and how you really can contribute?
Well, I'm grateful for the fact that I've been on the spiritual path for a long time, which has allowed me to really become more tuned into that, well, you say this, that sort of quiet, still, small voice. It really has become kind of a pervasive indicator in my life when I'm on track or off track. So it's really helped me because I so now see the signs that I probably noticed before, I probably saw before, but ignored them.
Yes.
And for me, it's having that willingness to be receptive, but also then to take action upon what I notice and hear. And what's happened for me is you know, you can call it serendipity, coincidence, all these different things, but I think it's really just being divinely guided to say yes to certain things that have led me down the path I'm going through. Yes. You know, my book became that I wrote was nothing that planned I'd ever thought about doing. It literally was a surprise that was going to happen because I'd never written anything before, which most, you know, first-time authors never have. But I'd done a few blog posts, and that was about it. And then one of my friends, who I know pretty well as a PR marketing guy, I'd asked him, like, you know, how do I get my message out there bigger? He said, well, this is back in 2011. He said, well, you know, social media, because I was big onto Facebook from 2007 mm-hmm. and other places too. He said, just put on social media what you believe about relationships, what your work is about. Just write about it in short phrases that are statements about your beliefs and see what happens. So I did that. And I probably, over a period of maybe a month, 2 months, posted 50 or 60 different ideas, actually probably about 70, that I thought about relationships, like certain qualities, certain aspects, certain descriptions. And because it was on my Facebook and Twitter feed, I had seen it disappear pretty quickly. So I copied them off and put them into a Word document, just building up this list of ideas. Mm-hmm. At the end of this time, I was like, okay, I'm done with this. It's like I've got enough things out there to feel good about it. I asked myself the question again, listen to the voice inside. I asked myself the question, which is the question came up, what am I going to do with this? Because like it's a list now. Maybe I'll just do a workbook or I'll do a workshop out of it or I'll teach about it or I'll talk about it. I don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And this still small voice, as I've heard many times, back in my head said, write a book. And for 2 weeks, I ignored it. And I remember vividly experience of it saying, write a book. And I would say, no, there's something I need to do with this. I'm not sure what it is. And the voice would say, write a book. And I'm like, no, it's not that. It's something else. And I kept arguing with it for 2 weeks. And at the end of that two-week period, I literally in my – it's viscerally, internally, I turned around to that voice inside because it was like in the back of my head somewhere. And I was kind of looking over my shoulder going, okay, if I did, how would I do it? And then everything I needed laid out in front of me. Because as I mentioned, one of my previous careers was in the printing industry as a graphic designer. So I already knew how to do layout and such. Yes. About 6 months prior, a friend of mine who I had known had written a book on poetry and had asked me to take a picture, because I used to be a photographer as well, take a picture of his artwork. He'd taken this beautiful painting and make it into a cover. And he showed me how to make the cover because he had a formatting software based upon an online company that did self-publishing. And I never heard of this organization, this resource before, but I looked at it and bookmarked it for future reference for clients, not realizing I'd use it for myself. So all the pieces of the puzzle I already had in place. And what I realized I'd done is that each of those things I put on social media was a chapter heading.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'd already had it. And I had to pare them down to 50 because I had some duplicates and some ones that didn't stand up so well. But basically, when I had that, I wrote the whole first draft in 6 weeks flat, and it was done, really.
No, that's really fast.
Well, it was, except it took me another 18 months to finish it because I got panicked.
that's honest.
What happened was, and I talked about this before, about how I'd learned that a man's purpose comes before his relationship. And in writing the book, I knew that when the book was published, I already knew viscerally and consciously that by writing the book and publishing it, I had put my stake in the ground. My shingle was hung at that point. So that way the world would know I was doing my career. My vocation was live, which meant at that time I'd be available for a relationship and she might show up. It was kind of in my head.
Right.
And I got scared. That's why I pushed it back for 18 months. So I got delayed, deferred, and nervous. And it really was ridiculous to think about it. But I knew also because by writing this book, I was hanging out my truth in the world to be read. So whoever I might date could see this book and then hold me accountable to it.
Wow.
It was fun.
You've given us so many insights and shared so many of your truths about this. It's wonderful. Boil down a few key points. Just boil down a few of the insights you've had for listeners as they're driving along in their car about how to do what you've done in your own words.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, you've got to really trust and listen to that guidance inside. And that's what guided me most of this journey. I mean, the book came through that. So many pieces of the puzzle came out of that piece. That's one of the things, definitely follow and trust that inner voice. Second thing is, and it's in a good way, there's more to life than what you know. And to have that willingness to understand that life isn't over when you're in your job. I did mention it before, but one of my favorite authors is Richard Bach. And in Book of Illusions, because I read all his books, in Illusions he said, one of my favorite quotes is, there's a way to discover if your mission on earth is finished. If you're still here, it isn't. And that is enough motivation for me to remember there's more to do, because if I'm still alive and breathing, there's stuff for me to do yet. And that's a motivation to keep moving, keep looking, keep seeking. So if you're someone out in the world who feels like there's more to do, good, but you're being pushed by something inside to look deeper. So your focus ideally is to say, what is it that moves me? What thrives me? What inspires me out in the world that I want to add to, contribute to, make a difference in?
Yes.
So those are good pieces.
No, those are very good pieces. Very salient. What's your vision going forward the next handful of years?
Well, I'm building towards more what I feel like I'm going to do, more live events and retreats, and I'm looking to do that in partnership. I'm actually currently single, but I'm looking at building my work with a partner in the work that we're doing so that we are in relationship but also in business together, teaching and making a difference. There is possibly another book coming. I've got a couple of intuitions that I'm not acting on yet because I don't feel fulfilled yet or fleshed out, but they're sort of in the back of my mind again. Mm-hmm. And really about being more of a transformational or inspirational agent on the planet. You know, I've been graced with being on probably a dozen telesummits over the last year and a half, and another one actually aired today. And I love the idea of being able to reach a bigger audience and be able to share my message and my work in a different way. I do a lot of work on online platforms. It really helps me do that too. And I love the ability to inspire, provoke, transform, and educate people out there who want to listen and hear this stuff.
Excellent. What would you do differently if you had it to do over again? What's the one thing you would do differently? I know. It's impossible, but take a stab at it.
I would have listened earlier on and started earlier, probably the simplest answer. But of course, with life experience, the things I teach now, I wouldn't have known back then. So it's almost like if I had all those things condensed into the first 5 years, it'd be much easier. But of course, I may not have understood them by then.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know what we don't know. So right. What are you proudest of?
I'd say proudest of is actually stepping out on faith and doing what I do. I would say my book, but it's only part of the picture. For me, it's really living my work I do, teaching what I teach, and realizing how much I've learned over the years that I use as my everyday vernacular in conversation with my clients, with my talks, and when I'm inspiring other people. It's so fulfilling, and that for me is what I'm most proud of.
Barry Selby, what a great pleasure having you with us today. We thank you for sharing the highlights of your very interesting and illuminating journey, and I know that listeners around the world have learned many lessons that will help them on theirs. How do those listeners connect with you? First of all, what's the title of your book?
Yes. My book is called 50 Ways to Love Your Lover.
I love that.
There's a whole story to the title as well. I mean, I think find it by going to 50waystoloveyourlover.com or to go on my website and look for the book on my website.
Well, who wrote the song 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover?
That was Paul Simon.
Okay. I think it's a brilliant title. There's some good synergy there, and you don't have any copyright infringements.
Exactly. I'm making up for what he did. I went the other way.
So did you just say this, and I just blew past it, that how they connect with you on your various – okay.
Basically, my website is my name, barryselby.com, and all my social media is my name, too. I'm basically on everything I'm doing with Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, everything else. It's all my same thing as my name. It's easy to find me.
Perfect. Listeners know you can go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, and podcast section, and find the highlights of this great interview with links, as Barry's just described. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us today, and please, if you've heard me say this for 11 months now, we have an infographic based on an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. We keep talking about it because we're having great feedback from around the world, and it's the best thinking of women and men around the world for centuries that have been used by millions of people in different ways, and it's all free and might be a good Kickstarter at whatever age and whatever career turning point. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, and if you like interviews like this, we would love to have you be a part of our tribe. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts, every single one of us. We don't learn them and we can't ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. But whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.